Hey folks, welcome back to yet another fantastic episode of We Talk Cyber with Monica, your one and only platform for real-world stories from some of the renowned global experts in security and privacy, making a real impact every single day. Do you wonder, what does it take to build a personal success story within security and privacy and make a real impact? What are some of the most important challenges within security and privacy today and tomorrow, and how can we overcome them? How can you build your career in security and privacy, break into leadership, and take it a step further? If you're interested to hear all about these and more directly from the source, then this podcast is the right place for you. So before we hop into the episode, make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel, Monica Talk Cyber. There you'll find all my videos, including my podcast show. But if you love listening to podcast audio, then please subscribe to We Talk Cyber in your favorite podcast app. Do it right away so you don't miss any of these amazing conversations and real-world stories. This is We Talk Cyber with Monica. In today's episode, we'll be talking to an industry leader who has worked with security culture and awareness for decades. He's a security culture coach, an author, and creator of the Security Culture Framework. Today, we'll be talking to Kai Rohr on what is security culture and how do you define it? Does security culture start and stop somewhere? Are there any clear demarcations? Has COVID brought additional challenges to security awareness? What are some of the biggest challenges within security culture? Can we even define a good security culture and how? What is Security Culture Framework? So if you want to learn about all these and more, let's meet our guest right away. Hi, Kai. How are you doing? Welcome to the podcast show.
Thank you so much, Monica. It's a pleasure to be here.
Lovely to have you. Let's just start by you introducing yourself. Could you just say a few words about yourself to the audience and maybe share a fun fact about yourself?
Yeah, so let's start with a fun fact. So I love traveling, and one of those things I love traveling with is a motorbike. I have what they call an adventure bike. It's a Triumph Tiger Rally Pro. And the key here is that the name of the bike is Tiger, but my bike is actually called Tiger Shark.
Okay. As in, you know,
that thing that swims in water. And if you want to know why, you have to come and approach me and I will tell you.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So tell a bit about yourself to the audience. Who are you? What have you been doing? And so on.
So I think you can call me a knowledge nerd. Over the course of my career, I've built a number of companies all around three things, communication, leadership, and technology. Those three things merge into today's topic, which is security culture. And security culture is a topic I have been working with and researching for the past decade and a half.
So let's hop right into it. Let's start by, could you define what is security culture and why is it important?
So let's start with the definition. That's the easy part. Back in 2012, I created something called the Security Culture Framework, which is free and open, and a lot of organizations are using this. And there we define security culture as the ideas, the customs, and the social behavior of a group. So, for example, your organization that influence this group's security. With that definition, it's like, okay, so what is security culture then? Well, it's all of those ideas that I have as an employee at a special employer. It's all the habits that I put in place, for example, clean desk or not, what I discuss with my colleagues over fetching coffee, and it's all the social behaviors. And the key there is social behaviors, because all of us have a huge variety of behaviors, but also most of us, and us being humans, target or filter those behaviors dependent on the group we are participating in. You've probably seen that in your workspace compared to going with the same people to a bar or a family dinner or even something else, their behaviors will be be different.
Mm-hmm. So is there a point where security culture starts and stops, or is it it is something that is a part of our lives, especially today in the environment that we have? Is it something that we should be having 24/7 in the back of our head, or is it something that you can say, okay, now we start and now we stop?
So I think that it's important here to differentiate between the cultural side of things, which is how we behave, think, and our customs in a specific group, and your so you as an individual, how you think, how you behave when it comes to security. And if we start with the latter, I believe that you as an individual always needs to be vigilant and take precautions when it comes to any kind of, you know, stop, think, click, right? Because it matters. Your brain is really fascinating in that way, right? So as an individual, you need to be vigilant. In your organization, you also need to be vigilant, but it's a different kind of vigilant. Because in a group of people, you will observe what other people are doing, you will listen to what they are saying, and then you will let those kind of insights and inputs control or at least direct your actual behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge today is that most of us are working from home, or me from my camper van out in the Norwegian forest. But the challenge then is that I don't go into the office. You don't go into the office. The person listening and watching now don't go into the office anymore. And what happens then? We no longer get that social interaction that will help us tune our beliefs and our behaviors. And in that regard, I believe that both you as an individual need to be more vigilant, but also the organization you work for need to change how they do security awareness trainings and, of course, security behavior assessments understand that the situation is very different now. Mm-hmm. So the way we deal with this needs to be different.
Absolutely. Can you just say something about what kind of things you have seen in terms of cultures in different countries and different organizations? Because it's obviously very dependent on where you're coming from, how you've been working, what kind of organization you belong to. What are some key changes or similarities or differences you have seen in terms of security culture?
So I will make an example here, and I will use you as an example. So unlike me, you are not Norwegian.
Not
or
yet.
you have a multi-ethnical background or something like that, right? And the reason I mention that is that most people like me who have only one ethnical background and one cultural background and maybe even are not traveling, the challenge then becomes that you become so biased by your lack of exposure to anything different from yourself. And I see this to be the biggest challenge in multinational organizations and when working with security culture around the world. Most people are not like you, Monica, or like me who are exposed to this. Most people think that all their experiences is exactly how everybody else has experienced life, which means that they tend to grow up with a lot of strong biases. But more to the point here is the world is very diverse. Cultures are very diverse. People are extremely diverse. It's not so that we can talk about one culture fits everybody or one behavior fits everybody or one thought fits everybody. And because of that, I believe that when it comes to working with culture, you first start with your own biases and then you work your way forward. Most organizations are actually mom and pop shops or very small organizations spread around in one single country. But those who are not, they very quickly face this multinational, multi-ethnical, multicultural kind of challenge. And then, of course, it becomes, how do you deal with that? Well, open up your eyes, open up your world, be accepting that your worldview may not be the only correct one.
And that's a very good point, because I feel, as I'm very much for diversity, I blog about diversity, I talk about a lot about diversity and inclusion, and I recently wrote a blog post also about that. We should do diversity and inclusion for the right reasons. That's one thing. It's not because we want to fulfill a quota. And the other important thing that I say quite a lot is diversity in not only what we see, but diversity also in what we hear. That's really my biggest mantra when it comes to diversity and inclusion. The reason being, we're talking about security culture, because first of all, we obviously come from different cultures and backgrounds. As you said, people have different opinions of how they grew up. It's good to have that broader mindset, but it also helps us learn a bit more about, try different things and see what fits, because as you said, one size doesn't fit all. So now coming to security culture from that perspective, obviously companies do face challenges, right? Either because, as you said, they are just very narrow in the way they think, or for the ones that have multicultural corporations, then the challenge is, how do you find the right culture for the organization? Because, I mean, people come from different backgrounds, different thinking, different opinions. How do we find that? So what are the biggest challenges you have seen around it, first of all? And what are your experiences with it?
I think that the biggest challenge I see are when people are so biased with their own perspective that they don't actually see that there are different perspectives. That's for me number one. Then number two, when you get to realize that, oh, it's a wide variety of options and ways to do things, then it becomes understanding and then picking, because there are so many. In my preferred way of dealing with multicultures is to not create one single culture that is, you have to do exactly like this or you don't fit in, but instead leveraging that diversity, focusing on the goal that we are trying to achieve. And of course, you need some direction. So ethical rules, moral rules, legal frameworks, all that stuff. But when that is taken care of, leave the employees to generate the best possible way to get that result, and you will be positively surprised.
Right. Okay. So what are the key elements in your understanding for building a good security culture that fits the organization?
Well, first you need to figure out where you are today, right? So you need to have an idea of, am I here in the forest of Norway, or am I in New York, or am I on the moon? Right? Before you have a good way of observing, measuring, and documenting your current situation, your as-is, for the ESO fans here, it's difficult to know that you achieved what you want. Mm-hmm. So you need to start there, document what you have. Then, of course, you need to figure out, how can I best, using the tools available, describe the to-be, the future situation, that culture you would like to see. And again, I always strongly recommend, I think is a word here, that one use the same language and the same kind of metrics for that future situation. But then comes a challenge. For many people, especially if you have a project kind of background, you think that, okay, when I have set that target goal, I work to get there, and when I get there, I'm done! Yay! Hooray! But a big shock here, culture don't work like that. So one of the challenges, if you like, in that perspective, with culture, is that culture is plastic. Plastic means that it is flexible. It moves, it changes, it adapts. And to make it even more interesting from my perspective, or complex for other people, it has a two-way direction. So the culture, that group, influence the individual members,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's easy. But the interesting factor is that also the individual members influence the culture. So it's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And that makes it more difficult to control, if you like. And it makes it very important to understand that this thing is in constant change. If there's one thing we can say about culture is that it is changing.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, we need to also adapt mindset as we go with time. And that's also something we generally say about security. I mean, things that worked yesterday not necessarily will work today the same way. Look at even cloud. I mean, just moving from the on-prem to cloud, it's not about just moving your data from your servers to somebody else's server. You have to have a completely different mindset of what that actually entails, not only from a security perspective, but also from a risk and a legal perspective. I mean, there's so many, it's multifaceted, right? So my question really is then, how do you even define good security culture? What is good?
That's an excellent question. There are two ways of answering that question. The pragmatic or difficult, if you like, is to say that, well, that actually boils down to you. You have to figure out what good means to you and in this context of security culture. And if you choose to go that road, which, fine, you can do that. I strongly suggest that you look at a specific set of behavior, but remember the plasticity and the norms and ideas that you want your organization to have. But the other approach of defining good security culture is to use a security culture survey and have a score of 80 or above. Then you actually know that you have a good security culture using a validated and reliable measurement instrument.
Interesting. Tell us more. What is this 80 and more?
Some years ago, I teamed up with some very smart people, and we created an instrument to measure security culture. Of course, back then, first time you do stuff, people will tell you it's not possible to do that. But, you know, we did. We have validated it, and we have measured it a number of times. Basically, we went from 139 different questions down to a set of 28 over the course of 3.5 years, I think, or two and a half or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Which means that we have a very accurate way of measuring security culture based on a specific definition. And then we take the results here, which comes in on a scale from 0 to 100. 100 is best. And you would think that if you are above, you know, average, so above 50, you would be good, but no. You need to have a certain level before you can actually see that you are good. And in the beginning, this was a hypothesis we had that you know, 50 is not good. It's probably the opposite. But where do you become good? We thought maybe around the 80 mark, but we didn't really know. A few years later, my company was purchased by KnowBe4. And in that merger, one of the things that happened was that we were, so my team were getting access to a lot of additional data. One part of that data is actual user behaviors.
Interesting. So
very fascinating, right? So now we are able to look at employees from around the world, and we are talking millions of employees from around the world, and how they behave when it comes to security culture. One example is phishing. Will the employees open the phishing email? Well, most of them do. And it's because we usually open the email to see what it is, right? And then a subset of those people who open, clicks on it. And then a subset of those again enter credentials. So with that kind of data on actual behavior and our security culture score with the same people, right? So we are tracking the same individuals, in their organizations. And then what we did was to look at the actual behaviors and the security culture scores of their employer. I will give you two examples here. If your employer have a score of 60 or below, so not even average and below, but 60 and below, employees will click and enter or share credentials, if you like, share credentials in 52 out of 1,000 phishing emails.
Wow.
So 5.2%. And some may think, you know, 5.2 is not that bad. Well, maybe it's not that bad to you, but then do the math.
Plus also passwords are reused. That's the issue. It's not just about the fact that they're doing it 5.2% of the times, but that how many of the services out there would actually have that password.
Yeah. So that's one perspective. The other one is business email compromise, because we've seen a lot of those cases. But that's an example of poor security culture. Now, you also asked, what is a good one? Well, I mentioned 80. Where did the number come from? Well, initially, it came from our understanding, but we didn't have the evidence. Now we have the evidence, and the evidence is very, very clear. So if you are in an organization with security culture score of 80 or more, your employees now are clicking on one out of 1,000, or not clicking, but sharing credentials in one out of 1,000 phishing emails. And that is tremendous. It's a 52 times difference, right?
Yeah, it's quite extreme in terms of difficulty of actually defining the culture and then actually making that behavior change happen. Change takes a lot of time to happen. So let me ask you something then, because you said what was fascinating for me in this is that you've done this analysis on the data worldwide, so multiple companies and user behavior and analytics on that. Do you believe this score, would it suit majority of the cultures in the world?
So for what we know today, yes. So one of the things we make very, very sure when we created the security culture survey was that we validated the items. And we did that in a number of cycles and with the roughly 10,000 employees over the course of several measurements and years. Now that we are measuring other countries, we translate the original language into the local language. And that is not as easy as me just taking it and, you know, oh, it says this in Norwegian, I'll just make it this in English. And in English is a fascinating example because you have at least three, but probably more, different English language cultures. Now, when we create this survey in those other areas, we don't use one English. We have US English, British English, Australian English. We do the same with French, for example. So French, Canadian French, Spanish. We have European Spanish or Spain Spanish. I don't know what they call it, but you know, Spanish and Latin American Spanish. And they were exploring, do we need to make an Argentinian, a Chilean, whatever, Colombian, Mexican kind of. So we're looking into these things to make sure that we measure the culture as accurate as possible.
Is it possible for you to share maybe two, three questions from that 28 that you mentioned? What kind of questions they are, just for the audience to have an understanding?
So I cannot share the actual items due to IPR. But if you take a look at the security culture report for 2021, we share a couple of the items in a translated way, if you like. So basically, we share the idea of what we are measuring. And what we are measuring is the cultural aspect of security, so not really the knowledge. So whether or not you know how to use a password manager is that's we call consider knowledge. So we don't do that in the cultural side. But we do ask questions around, do you or your colleagues discuss or talk about security culture? And if you do, in what kind of form? To what extent do you know the policies of the organization? How do you observe your colleagues when it comes to security and those kind of things? And again, the point here is that we are not asking you about how you are behaving. We are asking you about what you are observing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that gives you basically insight into not only one person, but everybody's perspective of what's happening in the organization. And that helps you basically understand and score the security culture of the organization in a way, what I understand.
Yes.
Fascinating, fascinating. Okay, let's say some organization takes your methodology and they want to apply it to the organization. They do some surveys, they check out that, let's say they are way below 80 and they want to approach 80, right? What would you recommend to them? How will this methodology also help them understand how do they approach 80, or how does it work?
So the scale itself today just have general recommendations. We are working on a set of more specific recommendations to move you from one bracket to the next one. And the reason for that is that it takes a different effort to move from below 60 to the next one than it takes from below 80 to past 80. So there are specific things that we are observing, and then the recommendations will be to put those things in place and then move to the next one.
Mm-hmm. You talked a bit about human aspect. So let's try to maybe wrap up with that. What, in accordance to you, what is your opinion, understanding, and experience on the human aspect of the security culture?
So I think the most important thing that I believe is mostly ignored by security professionals are the fact that we are making mistakes. So as an individual, as a human, it is in my nature to click on that link. It is in my nature to share my credentials. It is in my nature to make these mistakes. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to do it, but my brain is wired in a way that I will be doing it. Mm-hmm. So as professionals, we need to realize that. And that change is happening quite fast now, right? Especially over the past 5 years, this is getting somewhere. But what we are still missing is the next logical step. Mm-hmm. If we accept that I will make that mistake, we also need to prepare me and the organization for what happens when I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know, what do I do when I realize that I have actually shared my credentials? Do I Absolutely. Pretend I never did that?
Absolutely.
Or do I know exactly who to call? And Correct. Those people I call know exactly what to do when I call. And Absolutely. That's where I believe we need to go. We are not there yet.
And this last thing that you mentioned is so true and so important, because the real change and a sustainable change, in my opinion, will only come when we are allowed to make mistakes. It's not taboo. It's not blame game. It's not shame. And that we can actually talk about it in a way that we actually help the organization get better instead of worrying about the consequences of making a mistake. And the saying that goes is, to err is human, is a very old saying. And I feel like accepting that is the first step. And then changing after we accept it, is the second step. Fantastic. I think that's a lovely message, Kai. And I think I would take that as really your a key message from this whole conversation.
I'm happy with that.
It was really, really lovely to have you in the podcast show today. I had really amazing time. I think I had really fun conversations with you. So thank you for that.
It's been all my pleasure. Thank you so much for dragging this information out of me.
Lovely. It was a pleasure. So that was today's episode of We Talk Cyber with Monica. We talked a lot about security culture, communication, and also the human aspect in it. And I really loved, as I said, Kai's key message on accepting to err is human, and also then taking the next step of what we do with that and how do we build a positive security culture going forward. I hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as I did. I'll be back with more episodes, fantastic guests, and amazing conversations. So please continue tuning in. Take care and stay safe.